Welcome to our pre-show. We'd also like to welcome our loyal replay viewers. Our guest today is going to be Linda Chavez Thompson. She has worked with the laborers and also worked with the AFL-CIO and AFSCME, so we can't wait to talk to her. We have done more than 50 shows now, and this month is our one-year anniversary for Activate Live. We started last September, 2017, so we are really looking forward to it. Delaine Adams is here with us for our pre-show. Yeah. And Delaine, we're about 3 minutes away.
3 minutes.
How was your Labor Day?
It was good. It was hectic, you know, just kind of getting ready before school started. School started yesterday, so just been busy and definitely enjoyed the time off. So, yeah.
Excellent.
So it's always good to have the time off. But it's also good to see all the celebrations and all the parades and everybody putting in the work on Labor Day. So
I did absolutely nothing. I decided that I was just going to relax all day long. And that's what I did.
Yeah, that's good. You need that. You need to relax.
I'm going to get my streams going.
Okay.
And I'm checking out. Let me refresh my Facebook here. So we start the show a few minutes early just to notify all of our viewers, so that's why we start before 3 o'clock, but we're about 2 minutes away from our official show, and this is an exciting show because we have a labor icon with us today, and she's going to talk about women's rights, human rights, her union story, what it was like growing up in Texas, so it should be really exciting.
Texas legend.
And hello to Instagram. We have Instagram over here on the side running as well. We always let them listen in behind the scenes for our pre-show whenever we have an in-studio guest, so they won't be able to hear Linda Chavez Thompson, but they can switch over to one of our other channels like Twitter or Facebook. And we're hoping all of you write in questions that you have for Linda Chavez Thompson. And if you hit the reply button on Twitter, you can send us your photos from Labor Day. So do that now if you're watching us on Twitter. Hit that reply button and post a picture from Labor Day so we can see how you spent Labor Day. And you could maybe use a hashtag IAmHoliday or something like that. How's that?
And hello to everyone watching from the Texas AFL-CIO. Thank you for promoting this.
We'd like to say hello to Tony Worth and also to Gabrielle Regano. Hey, Gabby.
Gabby, Tony.
Yes. So you're saying Texas AFL-CIO has been great to us.
Yes.
So
yes,
we do want to send them some love.
Yeah.
What time is it? Let's see. Oh, we want to remind you today is the first Labor Day. It was 136 years ago today. It was September 5th, 1882. So this really is a special show. It's the anniversary of Labor Day and the anniversary of our show being 1 year old. So I guess we could say we're toddlers now. It's 3 o'clock.
I feel like
Let's
we need a birthday cake.
Activate your voice.
Fight for your right.
Speak up.
Speak out.
We're union and we're proud.
Go union.
Welcome to Activate Live, our weekly webcast highlighting union members across North America. I'm Tanya Hutchins with the Machinist Union, and here is Delaine Adams with the latest IAM news. Hey, Delaine.
Hey, Tanya. How are you?
Good.
Yeah, unfortunately, we start off with, you know, not so great news, especially coming off of Labor Day weekend. But the White House recently announced that they were canceling federal pay raises for federal workers. That was a 2.1% increase they were scheduled to get, as well as locality pay increase. They were scheduled to get that in January.
And that's a cost of living increase, right?
Cost of living increase. So so it's been canceled, but there has been a conversation around maybe the White House changing their mind. So it's just going to take people continuing to uplift and raise their voices about this issue. And so hopefully we can change the mind of people in the White House.
Okay, so we have to write in, we have to call, we have to email our representatives.
Take action.
And email the White House. We
can
just directly.
Yeah, directly email the White House. But again, you know, federal workers play such a vital role. And then the announcement was quickly condemned by IAM International President Martinez, as well as other labor leaders. And this is what President Martinez had to say. Just a quick quote on that. So, we are approaching a dangerous national security situation when we will be unable to attract the best and brightest to fill important roles within our federal government. And again, that's spot on. Federal workers make this country go. I mean, they're so vital in terms of our everyday lives. And, you know, we need to make sure that they're taken care of.
I feel like if you don't get a cost of living increase and gas prices go up, healthcare costs go up, it's like you're getting a pay cut for the next year.
You are. You are. And you know, when we talk about federal workers, you know, sometimes we always think about D.C., but the majority of federal workers, of course, outside of the D.C. area. So, again, you know, just can't just concentrate just thinking that it's just people in the D.C. area. Federal workers are all across this country. So
they are. So we're with them. We'll fight with them as long as we have to.
Yes, we will. So, but, you know, other than that, we had great Labor Day actions across North America by IAM members. So it was good. It was good to see the actions. It was good to see people engaged, especially off some of the victories we had recently, especially in the Midwest and in the South and Eastern Territory. So, yeah, and here's a photo from California, Local Lodge 1930, Local Lodge 1484, and District 947. Yeah, it's great. And they even made the newspaper, the Pasadena newspaper. So, one of my favorite places I love to attend is Paducah, Kentucky. Labor Day Parade. They always have a huge Labor Day Parade in Paducah, Kentucky. Huge labor presence there. And that photo's from Barry Reed. So thank you, Barry, out in the Southern Territory. And Local 387 in Midwest Territory in District 66. Yeah, this is great photos, people participating. And here we are in my old stomping grounds, photo by Nicole Fears in Atlanta, Georgia. That's at the UAW Hall there in Georgia, Labor Day photos. And you had Liz Schuler from the AFL-CIO. And then you had a lot of people who were working on organizing Delta employees there in Atlanta and seven other hubs. So, yeah.
They're doing a lot of work in that campaign.
A lot of work. Oh, and then one of our bright locals out there, Local 264, with Senator Warren. So that's a great photo. Thank you, Jeb, for allowing us to use that photo. So, yeah, just a lot of great things that were happening during Labor Day weekend. So
yeah, it's a nice time to recognize labor, and not just organized labor, but all workers. So
all workers. Yeah.
We're thankful for all of the people that sent us photos.
Yes.
Thank you, Delaine.
Thank you, Tanya. Have a great show.
Thanks so much.
All right. Talk to you soon.
So what did you do for Labor Day? Comment now to activate your voice about the workers who keep North America moving. And if you're watching us on Twitter, hit the reply button and post a photo of your Labor Day love. So let's get that conversation going on Twitter. Just hit the reply button and post a photo now from your Labor Day weekend. And live chat is enabled on YouTube as well. Well, if you are just joining us, we're commemorating the first Labor Day on September 5th, 1882. That was 136 years ago. So this is a black and white drawing. I think it's a sketch of that first Labor Day, September 5th, 1882 in New York City. And I read something somewhere that someone forgot to bring the music. So everybody was freaking out. But then one of the unions that showed up, I think they had instruments and they started playing a song. And it wasn't necessarily a Labor Day song, but they started playing. So finally they had some music there. So we just wanted to give you that little tidbit. But it's been a long time, 136 years of celebrating workers. Well, in 10 days, Hispanic Heritage Month begins, and our guest today has a story that combines labor and Latino heritage. Linda Chavez Thompson was the AFL-CIO's first executive vice president, ever, and the first person of color elected to one of the nation's three highest offices. Thanks for taking the time to be with us, Linda.
I'm very glad to be with you, and I'm certainly very glad to be talking with your audience and perhaps answering any of the questions that might have for me today.
So first off, what did you do for Labor Day?
I was at the San Antonio AFL-CIO Central Labor Council Labor Day picnic. I ate Polish sausage sandwich. I had a snow cone. I squired my three great-grandchildren around and literally played on the playground with them, although they're a lot better at it than I am. And so I enjoyed my Labor Day with my Labor family and my immediate family as well.
Well, you did much more than I did because I just relaxed. Well, you have such a wonderful story, and I'd like to start way back when you were young. You worked from an early age. Tell us about your first actual job.
My first actual job was when I was 10 years old, because my father was a cotton sharecropper. He worked in the cotton farms of West Texas. So the only kind of summer jobs that we had was not bagging groceries, of course. It was weeding in the cotton fields. So at the age of 10, my dad took me with them, the older kids and my mother, and we asked for work. They gave us work. They paid the adults 50 cents an hour, and they paid me 30 cents an hour. And at the age of 10, I started working 5 days a week, 10 hours a day, at 30 cents an hour for weeding cotton. It progressed up to the age of 19, which is the last summer that I worked in the cotton fields. And it had progressed all the way up to a dollar by that time. So my first job was weeding the cotton fields of West Texas for 30 cents an hour.
So how did that make you feel that as a child, you weren't making as much as an adult when you were doing, I'm guessing, the same work?
There was no reason to think anything different other than I was a child, so I was supposed to get paid less than the adults. As I grew up and learned a little bit more about what's right and what's wrong, I feel that I was very wronged at that point, but that's the only work we could find, and we worked it. We had to. We had to support ourselves during the summertime, and so it was me, my sister, my mother that went out there to work, and then the younger kids followed as they started getting older and following in our footsteps, of course.
Now, as a young girl, you said that you were, how were you treated compared to your brothers when it came to work?
When it came to work, there was no discrimination. If you were 10 or if you weren't quite at a tall age where they thought you were at least 10, we all worked at the summertime. At home, it was different because back in the 50s, girls were not held at the highest level of priority in the family. And my younger brother, who was the oldest of the boys, got treated a lot different than I did. He had more privileges than I did, but I was bigger than him, so I could beat him up a lot better than he could beat me
up. So other than your immediate family, what was it like growing up in Texas in general?
It was very hard because one of the things, and I was very young, of course, but I noticed it in school that I was getting not quite the education that I should have been getting, but the cotton farmers' children, of course, received first grade education. I got a second grade or second class, let's say, education because I was the daughter of a cotton sharecropper. And then the kids that migrated through West Texas doing work and then migrated up to the north, they were the migrant children who came through and went to school for the first 2 months and then moved on. They even had a third grade education because they didn't even get any books. They had to listen in or share a book with somebody else. And yet I managed to learn because I listened. I paid attention to what the teacher was telling the cotton farmers' kids. So I learned a little bit more and was able to do a little bit more with my education as I moved up, even though I did have to stop in the freshman year because that's the year that my dad pulled me out of school. He says, we need the money, you have to get out of school, and you have to work. So I only finished the ninth grade education, but I made as much of it as I could.
When you were working, were there talk of unions at that point?
Oh, heavens no. Not in West Texas. No way in West Texas. Probably not even now. Few unions exist in the west side of Texas because of the very anti-union, anti-worker attitude that still exists there. But as I grew up and learned what a union was, and I fortunately moved away from my hometown of Lubbock, Texas, after my career took off in the labor movement, because I actually got my first union job in 1967 with the Laborers International Union. They had a construction worker union. And I started out as a secretary. I was hired because of my bilingual skills, Inglés y Español. I can speak both languages, I can interpret, I could do anything. And that's why they hired me as their secretary, because the majority of the workers in Lubbock were Hispanic. And they could not understand the business manager, and the business manager couldn't understand them. So he needed a bilingual secretary, and I qualified.
Now, we're going to get back to that bilingualism in a minute, but can you pinpoint where you first learned about unions, when that moment was, when you really found out about them?
When I applied to be a secretary at the Laborers Union.
Oh.
Prior to that, I knew nothing about unions. I had no idea. For me, my dream job was to be a cashier at Sears and Roebuck, okay?
Wow.
And when my uncle said, I know somebody that needs somebody to do answer the phone and be bilingual, I went, applied, and the good thing was that I was sitting talking to the business manager, and he asked me, do you type? I said, yes. He never asked me how fast, okay? So I didn't tell him either, but I told him, yes, I could type. He says, do you know how to use a calculator? I said, yes. He says, can you speak English and Spanish? I said, yes. But about that time, there was a laborer who walked into the office. He looked at me. He looked at the business manager. He asked me in Spanish if there was any work. I asked the business manager if there was work. And then I began to interpret between him and the laborer. I had the job because I was able to do what the business manager wanted me to do, which is interpret. And he signed up. The guy went to work. And that's how I ended up getting my first job in a union. To me, it was an office. It had air conditioning. I didn't have to work outside, okay? So for me, it was the best thing in the world. Union, I had no idea what it was. I began to learn, though.
That must have meant so much to you when you started to see the benefits of being union.
You know what? It was still just a job answering the phone, typing up the newsletter. All of that was still a job. I will tell you that when I fell in love with the labor movement, when I really found out what the labor movement was or could do or did do, was when my dad left farm work. He couldn't work there anymore. And he came to live in Lubbock instead of living on a cotton farm. And he was looking for a job. And I told him, Dad, apply. Why don't you apply? You can do it. He says, no, I can't do it. I can't do it. I said, yes, Dad. Remember that you and Uncle Jesse and Uncle Joe had helped Grandpa build that little house in the back of his property. And he said, yeah. I said, y'all poured concrete. You put up walls. I said, you managed to build a house. I said, this is the same thing. Well, my dad took it. He went to work. The first week that he worked, back in those days, when you got your check, you ran to get that check cashed, okay? Because you needed the money. You needed groceries. You needed to pay the rent. So when my dad came home, I came about half an hour later than he did. I got off of work. He comes up to my house. He looks at me with tears in his eyes, and I still get very emotional about this. And he looked at me and he says, I wanted to show you my check. He had worked a 40-hour work week, and he says, I earned more in 1 week than I could earn in a month working on a cotton farm. And with his tears in his eyes, he was so proud to show me his paycheck. That was the day that I fell in love with the labor movement, because it changed my dad's life. It gave me the opportunity to see that a union could change people's lives. And I fell in love with it, and that was 67, 68. and I've been in love with it ever since.
I think that's so important to recognize that to some people, they may not understand that even a few more dollars can mean someone can eat. You know, it could mean food in the fridge, gas in the car, you know, making the difference of whether you're going to be able to pay rent or not. So I can totally understand what was going through his mind when he brought that check to you.
He was so proud to actually be able to earn a wage that he could support his family without having to scrape every inch. My mother could make 10 different kind of foods with potatoes and eggs and beans, and sometimes that's all we had. But my dad could buy hamburger meat, he could buy a steak, and that meant a lot to my parents as well. Now on the farm, you can kill a pig and make a lot of pork steaks, okay? But this way, my daddy said, I'm earning the money I want to provide for my family. And that was really a change for me. And I began to listen a little bit more. I began to know what the union was doing. I helped organize the public employees in the electric department there in Lubbock, Texas. My husband was a member, and we had a small local with the laborers union. At some point, I went from the laborers union to the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees because I had a talent for yapping and talking and being able to convince people to do things. And they decided that they needed an organizer, and it ended up being me. And I loved it. I did love a new job and a new challenge.
You know, we're all organizers, and you were able to organize successfully in the South, which some people say is very hard to do. So you touched on it a little bit already, but can you think of other ways? How did you do it?
What I did basically was you have to learn about people. What is their interest? What makes them want to have a job that pays better? And most of the time, of course, it's provide for their families. But also, it provides an opportunity to be equal. We're talking about wages that were paid the laborers in Lubbock, Texas, or public employees anywhere, is that it mattered. You know, it didn't matter what the color of your skin was. If you were doing the job of a tractor operator, or if you were a park and recreation worker, everyone got paid the same salary. There was no difference in salary because you happened to be brown or black. It just said, you're doing the job, you're getting paid the salary that that job should pay. And I began to see then how unequal life had been prior to that, because usually we were used to getting paid the lowest wages. We were used to being treated differently just because of the color of our skin. And I began to see there's much more with the labor movement, but it gives you respect. It gives you a salary that you can provide for your family. It provides you a certain pride that you're earning enough to provide for your family, and you're earning enough to say, no, that's not right. You're not doing right by me. You're violating my rights. So people begin to learn about their human rights, their civil rights, their worker rights, and I very proudly had a part in that.
Linda, we have Latina Equal Pay Day coming up November 1st. So Latina women, I guess, have worked all the way this far into 2018 to make what white men made in 2017. Can you believe we're still dealing with this unequal pay in 2018?
I believe it, and how sad it is that it continues to be the situation in this country, is that African-American women earn less, Mexican-American, Latina women earn less. There are so many inadequacies in our system today that we've got to get people to energize themselves and get involved somewhere, somehow, in some form or fashion, with making sure that this does not continue. It isn't. This is not just a union issue. This is a worker issue. This is an issue that people of color need to continue to get involved and fight back with, because otherwise we're not doing anything. So we're letting the problem continue. If we actively participate in politics, if we actively look for people who talk the language that we want to hear from them when it comes to workers' rights, to women's rights, to LGBTQ rights, to everything that we believe should be right. If we don't activate that, then what are we doing in the union business if it isn't about challenging and having people do right by all that we demand and should have?
I know there are, this is what we fight for in our union contracts, but a lot of times union members, we also talk to non-union members to explain to them the benefits of a union contract, and that's often how we get equal pay. But any advice for women out there that haven't jumped yet from non-union to union about what they can do when they're in that office trying to negotiate for themselves?
One of the things that happened to me is that I was able to go to many women's conferences all over the country during the 12 years I served as executive vice president of the AFL-CIO, and many, and I'm talking many, many dozens of times, I got asked by women, how did you do it? What did you do? What was the magical way that you got to where you got? And I said, really, it wasn't about me. It was about what I believed in. And when people believe very strongly in whatever their wishes are for themselves, for their families, for other women, and whenever I told stories at, and gave speeches at all those conferences, they would always ask me, how did you do it? And I said, believe me, it was not easy, because it was always somebody else who thought that I didn't deserve it. There was always somebody else who said that she's crazy. And I said, you know what? There were times when I would go home and want to scream and cry. And a couple of times there were some really dark moments in my career where I said, I can do better than this. I'm just going to go get a job washing dishes. It's better than this. And the next morning I'd get up and I'd be so mad. I'd say, you know what? This is not going to bring me down. I am going to make sure that it happens, whatever my troubles were at the time. And I never gave up, because I had friends. I had people that I could call. I had a circle of friends that I could say, this is what happened to me yesterday. Can you help me make sense out of it? And we talk. What you need is a circle of friends that believes in the same things that you believe in. Then that circle gets bigger and bigger and bigger, and you bring in more people that sometimes feel like they've given up and they can't make anything. You've got to give them the energy, and guess what? They give you back the same energy to keep fighting the good fight, because the fight will never be over. Nobody will ever say, oh yeah, women should get paid the same as men. Ha, that's probably maybe long after I'm gone. But the point is that if you don't keep fighting for it, if you don't try to make it happen, then you're part of the problem.
That's true, and great advice. We appreciate you for sharing that. You know, there's so much emphasis this day and age on unity, when we have attacks on unions and workers. How do you personally bring people together, especially when we have labor activists that are trying to reach workers who may be divided on issues?
That's always difficult, of course, you know, because you have people with different opinions, you have people with different objectives, you have people that think their ideas are better than yours, and that's fine. You know, you're going to have that all the time. You're going to have differences of opinion. But you got to say, okay, let's get our list out. Let's make a list. Give me your priorities. And then you try to get them to understand the priorities of others. I have the good fortune of still being retired here and working as a volunteer for the Central Labor Council. I'm the chair of the political committee here. I try to raise enough money. I think I know quite a few people in the union arena that I can get some money here to help us. But what I like to do with people is, what are you interested in? Better wages? Are you a better education for your children? What is the one thing that you wrap yourself around, and let's see if we can find a solution or an area where we can all work to better life for others. I'm involved with the immigration advocacy groups that are here. We just passed an ordinance for paid sick leave for workers in above 3 to 4 people employed who have no sick leave, who have to lose pay because they stay home with a sick child or they themselves are sick. We finally got it passed here in San Antonio. And it's a wonderful opportunity come January of 2019 that's going to happen. So there's so many things that people could get active with that affects them and their families that you just have to find that little niche. You have to find that little area where they might be interested. And then, of course, continuing to advocate for union rights, because we don't still have those in Texas and we're still fighting for them.
Linda, before we leave, tell us what your message is to young workers today who are just entering the workforce.
If you're just entering the workforce, listen to someone who's been at this for a long, long time. I started in 1967, and now it's 51 years later, almost 51 years later. I keep telling people that one of these days I'm actually going to retire from retirement. They don't believe me, and I guess they shouldn't, because I think they're going to shut me up when I'm 6 feet under, not before. But the point here is very simple. Believe in what you do. Do it for yourself, but more importantly, doing for those that follow you, your children, your grandchildren, for me, my great-grandchildren. I want them to live in a world where there is no discrimination, there is no second-class citizen. There are unions that continue to represent the rights of workers. Women are paid the same as men. That kind of a world, if it ever happens, I hope that what little I've done and what little I continue to do, it's helped, and that you, as an individual, can make a change, not just for yourself, but for so many others. You can do it.
Linda, you are getting so much praise on social media right now that we are going to put some of the comments up on the screen and read them so that you can see them in real time. So we're going to pop one up from Jill Cashin saying, great to hear her inspiring voice again. Jill is one of our regular viewers. Ramon Garcia says, great advice, Linda, union power. And then we have Heather Kelly saying, thanks for being a strong advocate. And Gabrielle Regano, Gabby, says, Linda, you are an amazing leader. We have to build the relationship with the workers to understand the unequal treatment.
How right she is.
Yes.
How right she is.
And one of our favorite machinists, Lori Pelletier from Connecticut, saying, amazing leader. Thank you, Linda.
Hi, Lori. One of my very good friends of many, many years.
Lori is awesome. And Lois Williams is saying, best wishes, Ms. Linda, from Local Lodge 850 in Oklahoma City. So, lots of love.
Thank you so much to all of you. I'll keep the good fight going. I just hope a lot more people do it. I would reach out as well to people who have retired. There's still things that you can do to help the labor movement in your city, in your town, in your state. Because there's so many things that our current leaders and future leaders don't have time for that we can help them out as volunteers. I volunteer with the retiree group here. I'm active with them as well as active with the political department here. Anything that I can do, I always offer my services. Somehow they always keep me hanging around. And so retirees have so much wisdom, have so much history. And they could make a lot of difference if they volunteer for a Central Labor Council.
Good point. Thank you so much, Linda, for your leadership and for blazing a trail for so many women.
Thank you so much, and it's a pleasure to have been with you.
All right, we'll keep in touch. Linda Chavez Thompson, a lifelong labor activist and advocate for workers from all walks of life. Well, let us know what you think by commenting on this video, just as you have been. We'd like to hear from you even during the replay. So join the conversation on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube. You could hit the reply button on Twitter. You could still post those pictures of your Labor Day weekend on Twitter by hitting reply. We have live chat on YouTube and Facebook. Keep those comments coming. Well, looking ahead, we have quite a few meetings that are coming up, and we always like to remind remind you of deadlines. So registrations are due now for our Wimpasinger Education and Technology Center in Hollywood, Maryland. The courses that are coming up are EAP Special Topics, that's the Employee Assistance Program, FSC Intermediate Steward Training, HAZMAT, the FSC Collective Bargaining, and the Advanced Communicators class. So you can get more information on the website, wimpasinger.iamaw.org, and you spell Wimpasinger, W-I-N-P-I-S-I-N-G-E-R. And the conventions, the IAM Aerospace Conference takes place next week in Fort Worth, Texas. We'll bring you a live report from our southern territory. The Young Workers Strategy Program is the last week of September. And that same week, September 24th to the 28th, is the Midwest Territory Staff Conference in New Orleans. Then the AFL-CIO Metal Trades Conference is the week of October 9th. And the Guide Dogs of America, their biggest fundraiser, is coming up November 15th to the 17th in Las Vegas. That is a huge fundraiser. There are three or four different events, so you can look forward to that as well. Before we go, we'd like to give a big shout out to Linda Chavez Thompson. Thank you so much for being our featured guest today. And also a shout out to Rachel Cavazos, who was there in San Antonio, Texas, at the CLC office, who was helping us set up the interview with Linda. And Rachel was the longest serving president of her local. She's a machinist, and I am local down there. So we'll have to get Rachel on someday to tell us her union story as well. So thank you to everyone who has been joining us. Kelly Easy Street says, great show today. Thank you, Kelly, for watching, and everyone else that has been making comments. Juliana Helminski said, such a privilege to listen to the interview that we had on with Linda Chavez Thompson. Thanks to Gregory Lawson as well. We appreciate you watching. Adina Pena, Edmundo Osorio, Jim Price gave us a shout out. Rosie Machinist 751. I'm going to read what she just said. Rosie posted the page that they had on Labor Day that said, on this day, we rise to pay respect to labor. It doesn't matter how much money or how many ideas you have. Without labor, nothing gets done. So we salute the men and women who built America. I'm going to keep reading. Is that all right? They are the people who make America great, and no matter what anyone says in a campaign slogan, her greatness comes from all the people of different races, creeds, religions who add their skills to advance this great nation. That came from Rosie's steering committee to all of you. Happy Labor Day. So we're happy about that. And I want to show you one more thing before we go. Okay, this is a picture of Matthew McGuire, who was a machinist. And he is the one who should be getting the real credit for Labor Day. So a few years ago, we interviewed some people over at the Department of Labor, and they gave us this picture. And they said there was a controversy about the two McGuires, and they spelled it differently. Peter McGuire was MCG, Matthew McGuire is MAG. But they pretty much agreed over the Department of Labor that Matthew McGuire, the machinist, is the one that really came up with the idea of Labor Day. So we're going to go with that because we're 1887. There was a big celebration in New York, New Day, founder. So we want to say thank you so much for joining us. And if you like what you've seen, please share this video right now. Hit that share button. We'll see you next week.